Ram Ram Hari Hari. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Srila Prabhupada. Nitago Premanandi. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nivashesha Sanyavari Paschatya Dei Satarami Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Bhagavad Gita As It Is Ki Jai. Bhagavad Gita Jayanti Ki Jai. So today is the appearance day. Usually we have appearance and disappearance days of great personalities. Is the Bhagavad Gita a person? Yes. It is, okay. Or he is. Or she is. But the so there's an appearance day. I don't know of any disappearance day, but there's an appearance day of Bhagavad Gita, and that's today. It's called Sri Gita Jayanti. So first, a little word of encouragement from the Bhagavad Gita itself, that Hare Krishna. Adyeshyate chiyam imam dharmyam samvadama vyaho yanajagena tenaham ishtaksham iti me matihi. This is the 70th verse of this 18th chapter, and it has no purport, but it's a word of encouragement. Krishna says that, and I declare that one who studies this sacred conversation of ours verily worships me with his intelligence. So we worship with ghee lamp and conch and this and that, but it gets very profound, the concept of worshiping with our intelligence. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. You know, Krishna gives such intelligence that we can come to him. So a wonderful place to start is the beginning. The first verse. You could repeat if you like. Dhamma kshetra dhritarashtra uvacham. Dhamma kshetra kurukshetra. Samaveta yutsavaha mamakak pandavaschaiva kim akur vata sanjaya. Maybe one or two devotees can chant if you like. Tere Guru. Samaveta Yutsavam Mama Kakpandavaschaiva. Vikarastu Vacha. Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre. Mama kak pandavas chayva kima kurvat sanjaya. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, okay, you can repeat. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? Sometimes devotees comment about this verse that it's kind of an unusual question to ask, because they came to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and it was a sacred place, or it was a good place to have a war, a holy war, we can say. And so they came there, and they saw each side saw the other side, and then what did they do? Well, you know, what, they weren't going to have a picnic at that time, so what did they do? Seems like a no-brainer, as we say. But it's poetic, you can say. So I'll just read the beginning of the purport. Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. Prabhupada doesn't quote this right in this part of the purport. He doesn't quote it, but Arjuna, after hearing the what we call the nutshell verses, the four main verses, beginning with Aham Savarsya Prabhavak Matak Savam Pravartate Machita Makata Prana Bodhianta Parasparam, the third verse, Yastesham Satatam Yuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvakam. And the fourth verse is Tesham, what is it? Evanukam Partham, Ahama Jnana Jamtama, Nashayami Jnana Dipena Bhashpatam. That's 8, 9, 10, and 11 verse in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So then Arjuna, he says, as Prabhupada says in the purport, we should understand the Bhagavad Gita as it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, the way that the teaching is understood by Arjuna. How is that? Sarvam etad ritam manye yanmam vadike shava nahite bhagavan vyakti vidur devana dharma. Arjuna says that, O Krishna, I totally accept this truth, all that you have told me. Neither the gods nor demons, my Lord, can really understand your personality. So this purport goes on. If someone is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession, without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all scriptures of the world. Now that's really saying a lot, because Veda means knowledge. And out of all the Vedic scriptures, all the books of knowledge, Bhagavad Gita is a central point. It's sometimes the Bhagavad Gita is called the Gita-upanishad, because it encompasses all the wisdom of the all the Upanishads. Pran, help me, is it 18 Upanishads or 108 Upanishads? How many Upanishads? 108, I'm sorry, 108 Upanishads. 108 Upanishads, 108 principal gopis, 108 comes out, it's an auspicious number. So one will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. Yes, there could be a science of God, theistic science. It's not a contradiction. So, so there's a, in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada gives us some guidance how we can actually come to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we already heard we should understand it in the submissive way that Arjuna understood it. By submissive oral reception, we hear that phrase. This may sound a little far out, as we say, but I have this example I sometimes share in the Wild West. I don't mean the Wild West like in general, the Western world, but I mean in the cowboy movies, cowboy and Indian movies. I think most of you have been exposed to some of those, especially in our younger days. And there's one scene where often comes up where there's a church. So it's like a frontier, and they have a small church. So people go to church. But because it's the Wild West, everybody has a gun. Even Annie Oakley, she had a gun or a rifle. And so what was the rule? Where are we going with this? So coming to the church, they have a big box or basket or something. And what does everyone do? Put the gun in the basket. Don't go into the church carrying your gun. Seems like a reasonable rule to have in the church. I guess we would feel very uneasy if we had some guest came from the first time maybe and came in big guns and holsters and came walking in. We said, wait a second, what's going on? So why am I giving that example? Because when we enter into the sacred precincts, the temple, we can say, of the Bhagavad Gita, we should also leave our guns at the door. And this is, Prabhupada hints at this in his introduction. In other words, we shouldn't come in with both guns blazing, and guns meaning our doubts. Doubts are, in Srimad Bhagavatam, doubt, samshaya, is considered part of intelligence. It's one of the aspects of intelligence. So it's not that it's forbidden to have doubts, but the idea is when one starts hearing from authority, especially Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all authoritative scriptures spoken by the Supreme Lord himself. That's not the time to just keep, you know, dealing with your guns, your doubts. That's the time to, you can have doubts, but you still listen submissively. Just like Arjuna, he had doubts. He even says in chapter 6, that is my doubt. Hisham sham shayasyasyam. Nobody could dispel this doubt. He was concerned what happens to the unsuccessful yogi. Only you can dispel this doubt, oh Krishna. Please do that. So shamshaya, doubt, is again, it's even listed as an aspect of intelligence. But it's not that we come into the holy precincts of Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of Bhagavad Gita as it is with the Bhaktivedanta purports, and we just our default mode is doubting. We're challenging attitude. Just, you know, how could this be like that? How could that be like that? Mm-hmm. I had a personal experience, and I'm from New York City. But I, this time around, but I joined the temple, the first temple I joined, it was in Boston. And before I moved into the temple, I was very challenging the devotees in my attitude. I even was personally kind of challenging with Srila Prabhupada when he was called Swamiji at the beginning. I've shared that a number of times. So I was questioning the devotees, and when we were standing up, and he was saying, "I don't understand. How could they do it?" And in other words, I wasn't saying I don't understand. Like, please enlighten me. I was kind of like, kind of yelling at the devotees. I don't understand. How could you say that? And the devotees said, Bhaktalan, that was my name, Bhaktalan, you don't understand because you're puffed up. So they kind of made it very clear. And it was a golden moment. You know, many of us have these coming to Krishna consciousness. We have certain moments where we, like, overcame something. It was like a big step forward. And that was a good moment for me, even though I was chastised, we can say, because I was thinking, well, that makes sense. I'm not understanding because I'm puffed up. It's amazing that somebody like from New York and, you know, really with such inflated ego was able to have that realization. So that's how we should enter into the sacred precincts, as I'm calling it on the Bhagavad Gita, that we can say, just as Arjuna, he asked, what is it about? Maybe about 30 questions in the Bhagavad Gita. I never went through it and made an exact count, but quite a few questions are asked by Arjuna. But he's not asking in a challenging way. He's not doubting Krishna's authority. He's just expressing his concern, his uneasiness, his confusion, apparent contradiction. Krishna, why are you instructing me to fight if you think that intelligence is better than work? So maybe Arjuna was trying to find a way out of the obligation to fight with his relatives and friends. So, of course, Krishna went on and gave a philosophical response to that. And of course, Krishna said, fight, in chapter 11, he said, you'll conquer your enemies in battle. kill your enemies. Don't hesitate to fight. Mayaivita nihita purvameva nimita matra bhava savyasachi. Nimita matra. Nimita means cause, or it could mean instrument. So he said, you just become an instrument. This Karna and who else? Bhishma, they've already been put to death by me. That doesn't mean that they already died, but they were condemned, we can say. They were condemned to death, although it was actually a blessing in a sense by Krishna. So you don't just be nimitta matra bhav, just become an instrument, Arjuna. That's all you have to do. It's already going to happen. If you decide you want to become nonviolent, foolishly, and you decline to fight, that's not gonna save their lives. They're gonna die anyway because it's my decision that's the way it's gonna be. But you could choose to cooperate and become my instrument. Just like way back a long time ago, 1981 or something like that, my good friend and very scholarly friend, Satyaraj Prabhu, he wrote some article called Violence in the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, there's the Bhagavad Gita itself, the violence didn't start yet, but it's all about, it's not about nonviolence, that's for sure. Not by a long shot. So, Arjuna was hesitant, especially because it involved his own kith and kin, as we say, his own relatives and friends. And finally, Kadishe Vachanam Tava, he says at the end, practically speaking, it took the whole Bhagavad Gita. Of course, in chapter 10, yes, Krishna says, Sarvami Tad Ritam Manye. I think ritam means truth. I totally accept as truth all that you've told me. But at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna finally makes that commitment. Karishye, the future, I will do as you say. Yes, I will fight. And at that point, you can picture Arjuna picking up. He had put aside the Gandiva bow at the beginning, which is quite... Gandivam Shramshate Hastat. Hastat is hand. It's Shramshate. It was slipping from his hand. He just became, his Gandiva bow was so dear to him, but he just forgot all that at this point because he was confronted by all friends and relatives and he was supposed to fight and kill them, or at least try to, or actually do it. So Arjuna was... to put it mildly, he was in tremendous perplexity. And we all have questions, philosophical questions, but we can't even begin to compare the nature of our question with the intensity, the emotional intensity of Arjuna's question. Any philosophical questions that follow throughout the Bhagavad Gita, not only for Arjuna's benefit, but for all of our benefit, are all in the context of this tremendous angst, this tremendous anxiety that Arjuna was feeling. I'm supposed to fight with my relatives. How can I do that? For instance, Bhishma Dev, he was a grandfather, and he was so emotionally close with Arjuna and vice versa. So Arjuna is in one sense, actually in one place in one purport, Prabhupada says Arjuna is going to continue the parampara. Krishna says that Ivam parapara praptam imam rachasyo vidus kalaneha mahata yoga nasta paran. So kalaneha in the in the passage of time, Sakala Neha Mahata Yoga Nasta Parantapa, this secret, this science of yoga was lost. But now I'm going to start a new disciplic succession, and Arjuna, you're going to be the first one. Why is that? Bhaktosi me sakashiti rahasyam hi etarutama. Because you're my devotee, as well as my friend. My godbrother, Chipparari Swami, he wrote, I find it a very nice book called Bhagavad Gita. It's philosophy and feeling or emotion. He was showing that there's an emotional aspect throughout the Bhagavad Gita. So you're my devotee as well as my friend. Therefore, you'll be able to understand this science that I first spoke to the sun god, and to Manu, Manu Rikshvakave Bravit. So what else did I want to share with you? Are you raising your hand? Do you want to ask a question? Oh, thank you. You're saving me because I don't have anything at the moment what I was going to say. So go ahead. Fill in the gap.
Thank you so much for the glorification of Bhagavad Gita. So you just touched on parampara, and we... In the fourth chapter, Krishna is describing Kshatriya Vamsa.
The what?
Kshatriya Vamsa, Vivaswan.
The dynasty of Kshatriyas, you
say? Yes, yeah. In terms of how the Bhagavad Gita was passed down. Srila Prabhupada in the purport explains that. He goes and illustrates in the purport that this is a Kshatriya Vamsa. He describes that in 4.1 and also some in 4.2. But particularly in 4.1, he talks about that. So I'm just curious as to the line parampara from Kshatriya to Brahmana. Do they go concurrently? Or because in our introduction, we have a Brahminical line, and it's somewhat similar, but it's different in that most of those are Brahmanas. And there is a Srila Prabhupada in the purport 4.1, he talks about Bhagavad Gita being especially for the Kshatriyas. So I was, anything that you can illustrate in that vein would be appreciated.
I'm not arguing with you, but I'm not disputing what you're saying, but I have trouble remembering that Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is especially for the Kshatriyas. I'm not. It's probably there if you're saying crisis. Because it would seem that Bhagavad Gita. I know myself. I'm about as much of a Kshatriya as a mouse is an elephant, and. I feel the Bhagavad Gita is for me also, even though I'm not in that Varna.
A number of places, so 4.1, purport. Herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order of all planets, from the sun planet. The kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Now, in the purport of 4.2, it begins, it is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. So the same thing Srila Prabhupada illustrates in both purports.
You know, what do we do in Kali Yuga? We don't, we it's hard to find a saintly king or a saintly politician. So it's actually meant not only for the saintly kings, but for you and for me and for all of us. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. There was a conversation in the temple in the big building in 55th Street, where it seemed at that time that the Hare Krishna movement was going to take over the world. It was like doubling. Prabhupada said double it, and the book distribution was doubling, and everything was expanding so quickly. And Hare Krishna became a household word, practically speaking, in many different places. And so devotees started like fantasizing a little bit, or imagining how when we take over the world. And they said, Srila Prabhupada, you can be the emperor, you can be the king. And Prabhupada said, no, you be the king, and I'll tell you what to do. I'll advise you, something like that, which is quite Vedic. Mm. So, bringing it up to the present day, most of us are not Kshatriyas by nature, but at the same time, we have to take the lead and promulgate the same teachings in Bhagavad Gita. And there's so many discussions in ISKCON. I remember you contemplating this a lot about Varnashram and how to, you know, what is its relevance to ISKCON. We won't launch into that discussion, but it's a question of when they, Srila Prabhupada was not very, didn't show a very happy demeanor at a certain point towards the end of his physical presence. And they asked Prabhupada what was the matter. Is it that you weren't able to complete your translations and purports of Srimad Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada said, no, I've given into the 10th Gyano, and that's not. So what was the concern? Varnashram Dharma, Prabhupada said. That only 50% of my mission was accomplished. And he said, and then the devotee said to him, I don't want to go too off into this topic, but devotees said, but Srila Prabhupada, a devotee is transcendental to Varnashram Dharma. And Prabhupada said, oh, if they're devotees, then why are they leaving? So Prabhupada wanted to, maybe you can, he certainly didn't use this language, but it was sort of a safety net for devotees that can't follow the strict, 16 and 4 and all that, and toe the line. Then there's a safety net, so to speak. If Varnashram Dharma, that's why Prabhupada said 50% of my work is not completed, and that 50% was to establish Varnashram Dharma. So, for those who can't quite make the grade or can't rise to the occasion and do the orthodox ISKCON standard, at least for initiated devotees, chant 16 rounds a day, follow four regulative principles. When you get initiated, you have to know that. It'll be very embarrassing. It might be a setback in your initiation if you couldn't answer that question. What are the four regulative principles? Let's see. You can't remember. That's not good. And how many rounds will you chant each day? If you came out and said, there's a different Sangha, or there used to be, where they would, the answer would be four, but that wouldn't go over too well with Srila Prabhupada. Wanted 64 rounds, and the devotees, the kind of mostly hippie type devotees in 26th Second Avenue, did they accept that? No way. They said, No, no way, Srila Prabhupada. 64 rounds. How could we do that? So then, Prabhupada said, okay, 32. No way, Srila, we can't do that. And then Prabhupada said, 16. And one, maybe a not very mature devotee was tried to protest, you know, again, no way. He kind of blurted that out a little bit, but Prabhupada stopped and said, no, it's minimum. It's 16 rounds a day. So quite a way down from 64. Of course, in Vrindavan, there are quite a few devotees that every day chant 64 rounds. Maybe some of you do, but it's not that common because we have more kind of active type service to do. So Varnashram is out there. It's on the agenda, but I heard that the GBC, they were discussing that Varnashram, but then at a certain point they gave up because it was just so complex, how to apply it and to what extent and how do you apply it in the Western context and how do you apply it to ISKCON devotees and all that. Anyway, that could be a nice discussion. So basically, today is the glorious appearance of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Jayanti. There's still some time left in the class. So what can I say more about Bhagavad Gita? And somebody have a comment, question?
I was wondering, like, if I finish my rounds and I don't know if I want to chant more rounds or if I should spend time reading. Like, let's say I only have an hour for whatever reason. Should I use my time to read or chant, or does it, like, something depend on something?
Well, you're bhakta, and you have bhakta leader, so you can always consult with your bhakta leader. But chanting is the essence, you know. If you feel you have some time, what do they call it, discretionary time, then it's not a bad choice to chant Hare Krishna. But there's another instruction besides chant Hare Krishna, and aside from the four regulative principles, be happy. Prabhupada would use that phrase. Sometimes you have a card that gives the mantra, says chant Hare Krishna and be happy. I don't want to be happy. Well, that's a problem. But one follows the other. Prabhupada said, I made the hippies into happies. Isn't it?
I mean, but I don't really know. I don't really know how to be happy. Like, I try to be happy, but for my idea of happiness is so twisted and materialistic. So, like, for me to just chant 16 rounds and then all of them just go find something to make me happy, probably going to get in trouble or cause some sort of disturbance or et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, before we became blessed with Krishna consciousness, our idea was happy. Being happy was having enough supply of sense gratification, wasn't it? Whether through having money or just, you know, having enough drugs or, you know. So that was not very intelligent. You want to pursue that kind of happiness which goes much deeper, which is the happiness of the soul. Soul is eternal servant of the Supreme Lord and the devotees of the Lord. So we have to work on that, developing a service attitude. Just like this festival that just ended here in Alachua, You see, so much service was done. Everybody had their job to do. I was joining the chanting in the tent there, and it was very sweet chanting, very nice. And while the chanting was going on, you know, everybody, you know, so those who had that duty, they had to follow the time schedule. So while the chanting was going on, they were starting to dismantle, taking down the decorations, and they were already like one step ahead of the game. Not that they wanted the festival to end sooner than it was supposed to, but that was their service. So we all have service. In 1966, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I caught on at a certain point I think whatever the class topic is, everybody likes it if you can talk about something of the real old days. So this is like right at the beginning. And I kind of caught the idea that you're supposed to do some service for the Swami. It was like a club to, you know, do some service for the Swami. So even though I was, you know, just barely coming down from episodes with LSD and neurosis and what have you, I caught the gist of that. So I came waltzing into Prabhupada's apartment, and I said, "Swamiji, I'm willing to help out with something." And even though it wasn't very, like, you know, very respectfully and politely expressed, I know that Prabhupada was very happy to come to that point. You finally caught on. So Prabhupada didn't hesitate. You may have heard before. He immediately picked up this huge tray of prasad, and he handed me this big tray of prasad. And he didn't just give me a service, he gave me a position. He said, "You could be the one who serves prasadam to the devotees." Wow. So I received the tray and I went out. Again, I'm sorry if this is a repetition. I went out to the landing outside his apartment. There's a steep flight of stairs, and I closed the door. And I'm standing there with this big tray of prasadam, and I became, I went on the mental platform. I was thinking, can I navigate this? I was still, you know, somewhat under the influence of hallucinogens. So I was standing there 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then some devotee, hippie devotee, whatever he was, came running up the stairs and grabbed the tray from me. You weren't going to wait any long for me to get over my catatonic fit. And so I just went down the stairs without the tray and did my usual prasadam seva, just eating the food, that wonderful Hare Krishna food. I think Narantara Prabhu, my godbrother, he wrote a song about it. I got to get some of that Hare Krishna food, you know. Somebody who wasn't quite a devotee but appreciated that. So how did I get there? Anyway, that was like a breakthrough for me, that I told Srila Prabhupada I was willing to do some service.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
The thing is, the happiness, the reason behind for the minimum 16 is, minimum 16 rounds, once complete the minimum 16 rounds, the happiness will come automatically, or the happiness will come after three rounds also. So
the happiness will come, how is it? I'm having trouble. Maybe the microphone's too close to you.
No, my question is, the reason behind minimum 16 rounds.
You can remain 16 rounds?
Yeah. No, what was the reason behind minimum 16 rounds?
Why did Prabhupada pick 16 rounds? Is that the question?
Yes, because you said happiness. The happiness, I can get it in the third round or the first round itself. So what was the reason behind for the minimum 16?
You're saying that happiness can begin with the first round. Why did he choose 16 rounds or something
yes.
like that? I'm glad I understood you. Because we wouldn't agree to chant any more than that. And that was the minimum. He didn't want to go any lower than that. In his generation, they were chanting 64 rounds, as far as I know. So that, what they were supposed to, and he did. So that takes, there's a principle involved. It's called Sankalpa, strength in numbers. How does that go? Sankalpa something. Strength of number, numerical strength. That's one of the principles of practicing bhakti yoga. So like the six Goswamis, his quality is more important than quantity, but tell it to the six Goswamis, they had both. They offered many, many obeisances, even dandavats, every day to the Lord, to the Vaishnavas. So numerical strength helps. So at least 16, you know, that's not a huge number. I know many of us, we are so busy and, or in my case, so slow. And so it's like a bit of a challenge. But I'm not proud, but I'm happy to share with you that since I joined, actually even for about 9 years before I joined, since I met Srila Prabhupada in July of 1966, I was always chanting, you know, sometimes I was chanting 32 rounds because I thought that one round was a round trip, you know, you go this way and come back and that's only one. And I would say, how do the devotees do this every day? And they still have time to do clean the temple and do so many things. And then I was told that, no, it's only one, that's a round, that's two rounds, that's three rounds, that's four rounds. So that was a bit of a relief, and it seemed more doable. But we have to find the time somehow or another. I know, and one time I got terribly sick in 2019. I got real sick. Be careful with the medical establishment. A little word of advice, they don't always do things right. I won't go into the detail, but they had some contamination in a catheter and this and that. Everything went bad. So I had to rush to the hospital. And I couldn't chant rounds. I couldn't even turn over. I was in really bad shape. I won't go into any more detail on that, except to mention that when I finally, it was only 4 or 5 days, and I got back to my place, I had 48 rounds that I was behind. Maybe some of you also had some moments where you fell behind. And so I was chanting so-called extra rounds every day to make up with it. So that's okay. But some people were saying, I know there was another Sangha in Bogota, Colombia, and it's not a question of quantity, it's a question of quality. And I would question, and I would say, well, strength in numbers. In other words, if I have a larger quota and I have to chant at least 16 rounds, then I have more opportunity to chant at least one quality round. In other words, give yourself more exposure to the chanting, and then you may actually be successful, at least for some of the rounds, that they're actually quality. It's a whole discussion, what do I mean by quality rounds, but at least attentive. That's a challenge. Does anyone here, when they're chanting japa, the mind never gets distracted and never think of what you have to do during the day. Or don't be ashamed to admit it if you're chanting so nicely. It will inspire us. Maybe you're just too modest to admit it. Or maybe it's just the fact that that we're all, in one sense, in the same boat, that we're still, when we're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we're still trying to hear the mantra. And some probably say you chant louder than the mind. That could be there. Anyway, again, today is Krishna Jayanti, so I don't want to go way off into a not directly related discussion. Yes, Mantaji.
Appreciate you setting the scene for today. And I was thinking a very nice point that Prabhu made, and very interesting, the direction Prabhupada said about the Kshatriyas. And the part I was thinking, you know, how unqualified I was, and how Krishna says that he's revealing this knowledge or giving Arjuna this knowledge because he's a very dear friend. I'm thinking, well, not all Kshatriyas are Krishna's very dear friend, but some are. And and how Prabhupada had said also that this Bhagavad Gita is actually personal association. It's actually Krishna. Mm-hmm. It's actually Krishna speaking to you. Of course, if you become his very dear friend. And another part where Prabhupada said, if you become a clean slate, you know, and I think we know something first. You know, we have to clear out what we think, you know, before we can understand something, or we're just messing it up with our blocks and, you know.
You mean like preconceptions, and we have to be open to receiving something that we really hadn't learned before. You work with one?
Nothing there. You know, it was just very empty. When I got the Bhagavad Gita, I just accepted it, you know, without any, you know, preconceptions. And I just had no doubt that Krishna was God, so I just have to take this and believe it. You know,
oh, you're very fortunate.
Some special thing. I was very special.
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita is one thing, and Bhagavad Gita as it is in a class by itself. And Prabhupada even mentions that in his introduction. And one American lady was asking me to recommend an edition to the Bhagavad Gita, and I couldn't think of anyone that was completely or mostly bona fide. So that was part of Prabhupada's inspiration to write Bhagavad Gita as it is. Mm.
The war has ended on Bhagavad Gita. You can read from any Bhagavad Gita that you feel is the one that speaks to you, and there's nothing to dispute anymore.
Well, that's, I don't want to accuse you of being a female sentimentalist, but that's a huge, huge discussion.
Yes, but
Sure, better as far as the, you know, the different editions of Bhagavad Gita that were published in ISKCON, I completely agree with you that I'm never going to tell someone, don't read that Bhagavad Gita, it has mistakes in it or something like that. The early edition, there's a booklet called Responsible Publishing by Dravida Prabhu and Jayadvaita Swami. And some of it gets quite humorous, actually. And it does give a lot of vital information why this edit was like that. Why did they edit this? And they go into great depth. And I strongly recommend that devotees that are very doubtful about the the fact that the 1972 is it edition was you can say abridged. In other words, it was corrected from different mistakes and that I recommend that that it doesn't in any way reduce the authenticity of the Bhagavad Gita that it was.
Yeah. Actually, that was the one I got, was the original, and it totally spoke to me. But later I found, how Prabhupada very much authorized Jayadeva to Swami. There's no.
Right, I was just thinking that point that they handed Prabhupada a bunch of papers, and Srila Prabhupada, this is Jayadvaita's, I don't know if he was already Swami, this is Jayadvaita's latest revisions and work and editing, and Prabhupada handed all those papers back and said, Jayadvaita is parampara. And he made some other very liberal statements about his Prabhupada was so precise and so demanding as far as that the publishing has to be done very, very carefully. So, but he had implicit faith in the work of Jayadvaita Swami.
I think this is very important to establish, and I think there's been a lot of confusion. And it's been, I would just like to humbly say this because I've been one of those people who was a devout original bookie. And that book did speak to me. And Jayadvaita Swami also says himself he will not get rid of that book because that was the book that spoke to him. But how Prabhupada really did want for scholars.
Yeah, in other words, it's not a crime to correct an error.
Yeah.
It's not. They say, oh, Prabhupada accepted that book. You know, you're defying Prabhupada. No, Prabhupada wanted to get the thing published.
Yeah.
Imperfect though it may be, he had to get because he only had this very abridged edition, so he wanted to get a more complete, at least it would be complete, and he wanted to get it out. So that didn't mean that in the future that errors couldn't be corrected. These books have to be the books for 10,000 years, so it's not like that we're obliged to present for 10,000 years some obvious errors, and I mean really obvious errors, such as Planet of the Trees and Ocean Journey, and there's a whole list of them.
You can. He authorized those changes too, I think, as far as I understand. Those on the trees, isn't it?
Based on what?
The Planet of the Trees, Prabhupada did want that fixed in the next edition, I thought.
That might be one of the mistakes that Prabhupada was there to correct, but we shouldn't be either sentimental or fanatic. Those are two tendencies.
At the same time, what I'm trying to say is there is a war on that, and there's two people, and Prabhupada did authorize that first book. He said this Krishna wrote this book, and he also one of the changes. So the way I look at it, because that book changed me on a dime, it is authorized, but a scholar may not be able to appreciate the, misspellings and all this stuff, but it can still fully change a person. So that's why I feel the war is over. If that's the book that really, works for you, maybe the one we want to destroy.
I'm happy to see anybody reading any edition, any BBT edition, we can say, of Bhagavad Gita, even the one that was filled with some really obvious errors, because there's still benefit so much. But if I were to advise someone which edition would be preferred, I certainly would suggest to them that they read the more like, I think it was the 72 edition where the errors were corrected. Yeah, that's the 72. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have the other edition up here. Anyway, again, if someone's coming to Krishna consciousness, you know, and they happen to be reading the old edition, it's great, you know. I mean, we're not going to say it's bogus or something like that, but when it gets more refined, is to take the edition that the errors were corrected. And, you know, some of the errors, there's no debate about it. You put the wrong purport with the wrong verse, I mean, you know, it's not like, that's original, that's what Prabhupada did. can't go that way. All right, so thank you all so much for your kind attention. Shri Gita Jayanti Ki Jai. We'll see you all for chanting the whole Bhagavad Gita this afternoon. Thank you. Hare Krishna.